I pray that I may speak and you may hear. In the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Those of you who faithfully endured my series of sessions on Advent, Christmas, and Epiphany at the end of last year will know that my first question about any Christian festival is always, why was this particular day chosen? In the case of the one we're celebrating today, the answer is easy. It's on the front of your bulletin, and Father Casey mentioned it at the beginning. For as soon as churches established the day for the annual celebration of the birth of Christ, this festival quickly followed 40 days later. Because, as today's gospel reading also tells us, when the days of Mary's purification were, according to the law of Moses, were accomplished, they brought Jesus to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. For the Old Testament law required a 40-day period of purification for the mother after the birth of a boy, and believe it or not, 80 days after the birth of a girl, because the process of childbirth was believed to make a woman ritually unclean. It's not very surprising, therefore, that Catholic Christianity called this annual commemoration the Feast of the Purification of the Blessed Virgin Mary. When the Protestant Reformation came along in the 16th century, the Church of England also continued with this name for today, until the 1662 prayer book, when it was then retitled The Presentation of Christ in the Temple, commonly called the Purification of the Blessed Virgin Mary. The same change was also made in the American prayer book, and as you see, it has survived down to our modern prayer book too. I wish I could tell you that more enlightened minds had decided that childbirth did not render a woman ritually unclean. I wish I could tell you, but I can't. Instead, some more Protestant members wanted the emphasis of the commemoration to fall on the presentation of Jesus rather than the Virgin Mary, so honored by Catholics. Sadly, therefore, the popular tradition persisted that women needed to be churched, as it was called, after the birth of their babies, and persisted even into the early years of my ordained ministry, coming up for 50. There were still places, I remember, when women would not go out of their home until the priest had performed this ritual. Thus was the untruth of female impurity perpetuated. In any case, after all that, I think that both of the titles for this festival that we're celebrating have got it wrong, including our modern prayer book. The Purification of the Blessed Virgin Mary and the Presentation of Christ in the Temple merely describe the occasion of the event told in the Bible and occupy, if you look it up, only the first verse of the reading. Both traditions have got it wrong, I believe. And to support my claim, I do what scholars have to do about such things. We look to the east. Not to Delaware, but much further east than that. The ancient Christian churches that originated in the eastern half of the Mediterranean Sea. Among these Eastern Christians, neither of these titles is used, Instead, the festival is called the meeting. Meeting is at the heart of the story, not just the first verse. And it's on the most obvious level, the story is about the encounter of Simeon and Anna with the infant Jesus. But on a more profound level, the meeting that is here taking place is between heaven and earth, between the human and the divine. This is no casual encounter between a couple of old people and a pretty little baby on the steps of the building, perhaps one warm, sunny afternoon. No doubt hundreds, perhaps even thousands of little babies had been brought in their parents' arms to fulfill the requirements of the Mosaic law, while old Simeon and Anna had looked on during their long vigil in the temple precincts. They had seen them all, and on the surface, this one must have appeared no different from the rest. There was no visible halo over the head of the child proclaiming his divine status, no retinue of disciples yet, that would have drawn attention to his special importance. And his parents would surely not have still had the gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh in their arms to give the game away. But nevertheless, although this was just one more very ordinary couple turning up from the countryside, bringing their very ordinary-looking baby to fulfill the temple rites that were associated with his birth. So normal that no one would have given a second glance. No one it is, except Simeon and Anna. They alone were able to recognize the extraordinary in the ordinary, the heavenly treasure in an earthen vessel, the divine being in human form, and so enabled a profound meeting to take place. Many years ago, when I was the director of the University of Notre Dame's program in London and preaching on this very feast day to the students who had come over there, there were posters for an ad campaign running in the London Underground, the Tube, as we call it, at the time. They pictured a man on an escalator looking across wistfully at a young woman traveling in the opposite direction on the parallel escalator, who appeared to be eyeing him in a similar manner. The point of these images was, of course, that they wished they had met one another, but their paths had failed to cross. They simply pass on their ascending and descending escalators like ships in the night. By the way, the posters were very naturally enough for a dating agency, which would presumably enable one to meet the perfect stranger. This campaign, of course, was before the invention of dating apps, which have changed everything. I have no personal experience of either dating services or dating apps, as I said to my then 21-year-old students, so I couldn't say how successful the agency was. Instead, I told them that many people have found their partner in life for whom they are searching, frequently among not strangers, but someone they had actually known for quite a long time, but never seen in a romantic light until the right moment came along for their true meeting. So as we ponder today's meeting, ponder this. It would have been so easy for the two groups, Anna and Simeon on the one hand, Jesus and his parents on the other, to pass one another by with hardly a second glance, like commuters on crowded escalators. Nothing unusual to see, nothing to attract one's attention. Simeon and Anna may have gone on watching and waiting, peering into the distance, looking for that special child who would be different from all the rest, as if waiting for Mr. Right to come along. As we've seen, there's nothing in the telling of the story that says they expected to see the Messiah as an infant in his parents' arms. What is there is the meeting of heaven and earth, which occurs in and among the very ordinariness of life. Anna and Simeon's recognition of the extraordinary fulfillment of all hope is in the ordinariness of life. And that, may I suggest, is often our problem in life, not just with regard to our romantic attachments, when we fail to see that the partner for whom we've been seeking has been there all the time, but unrecognized by us, but I would suggest, perhaps even more importantly, in our spiritual life, when we fail to notice that God, for whom we are searching, has been there all the time, at present, but unrecognized by us. Thus, the opportunity for a life-giving encounter can be missed. Our trouble is that we expect God to be instantly identifiable because he's so different from us. And so we can end up looking in the wrong direction. We imagine that we'll only find God in the extraordinary and not in the ordinary, in the obviously miraculous and not in the everyday. We expect that if he does show up, he will be the stranger whom we have not yet met. But God became incarnate for us, entered into ordinary human existence for our salvation. And so he is to be found as much in the familiar as in the unfamiliar. We can meet him here in the blessed ordinariness of this congregation, or in the sacrament of the Eucharist, and in those with whom we share it. All we need are eyes to see and the patience to wait.